Bold. Brave. Her. With Dr. Pam Peek.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and this is episode number 554 of the Bold and the Brave, Her podcast. Today, I'm joined by an expert in all things the non-negotiable mindset. You know I say this all the time. Seriously, it's in at least a couple of my books. Well, finally, someone wrote a whole book about it. Because I happen to think it's one of the most important things to consider when you're looking at re-upping your game in life, no matter whether it's professional, personal, or whatever. This mindset is critical. It's essential. It's where it's at. Now, who am I being joined by? I can't tell you how excited I am to be joined by Robin Landa. She is a distinguished professor at the Keene University. She's a globally recognized expert in creativity. We need that. Branding, design, and advertising. And she has countless honors. But most importantly, she has a new book. This is the one we're talking about here. The Secret to Getting Stuff Done. The Non-Negotiable Mindset. I'm going to do it again. The Secret to Getting Stuff Done. The Non-Negotiable Mindset. Robin, welcome to the Her Podcast.
It's an honor, Pam. I'm a major fan of yours. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, listen, I'm a huge fan of yours after reading the book. Oh, my gosh. I almost fell off my chair when I saw the title. And I said, okay, we need to talk to her. Your background and your credentials are impeccable. So you've got street creds. I'm listening to you. And so, first of all, I always ask each of my authors, why'd you write the book?
I wrote it because when I shared my secret to getting stuff done with faculty who I mentor nationwide, their eyes opened and they said, oh, that makes total sense. And when I help friends who want to write a book and I tell them my method, they're like, they call me back and say, that really worked. Thank you. So I thought, why not?
I just think that that's wonderful. It's inspiration for all intent and purposes. You know, you sat back and you said, huh, this is cool. And is anyone else doing this? Or has anyone written a book about this? Or where are we going? And is there something that could be contemporized to 2026? And that's why I loved it. You actually have a four-step plan for all intent purposes, which you call the non-negotiable practice. But before we get into that, I've got to tell you, oh my goodness gracious, you gave some early examples of how you can get in your own way. And there was one with the dentist and your dental practice. So it made me laugh so hard I couldn't even stand it because that's how I started. So you're going to share yours. I'm going to go first. All right. When I was a little girl, I'm just a total rebel in case you haven't picked this part up yet. And, you know, brush your teeth every day, you know, so you don't have to see Dr. So-and-so and end up having drills and needles and nasty things like that. You know, I blew them off. You know, I brushed my teeth. Oh, sure, I brushed my teeth, Mom. Yeah, and of course I didn't. And you know where I landed, right in the dentist's chair. And we had the drill, and then we had the needle and the whole thing. And I sat back and had a little conversation with myself that kind of went like this. Shut up and brush your teeth. You know, there's no more talking about this because I was so ticked off. I'm like, I never want to see this guy again. And from that moment on out, you know, perfect teeth, flossing, I mean, you know, and it's weird. It was like on a dime I changed. Now you tell your dental story.
Well, I think you summed up my entire book by saying, shut up and brush your teeth. My story was that my father, it was my father who seemed to believe that a a woman's beauty was based on her teeth, or world peace was based on great teeth or healthy teeth. And so, I mean, he put a calendar in the bathroom, and I had to mark off twice a day to prove to him that I brushed my teeth. And I was raised not to cheat and to honor my commitments. So I, you know, I would dutifully brush my teeth and cross off an X the calendar. And that was a great lesson in making a commitment and blocking it on your calendar. And I'm a dental hygiene warrior.
Okay. Well, girlfriend, I'm right there with you. You know, we both learned through the school of hard knocks.
Yes.
And
yes.
Mine hurt a lot. And yours was more of a psychic wonder. You know, listen to Daddy-O in a big way. But I love the entire concept. I've been using that word non-negotiable forever. And I've noticed the magic that happens when I look, when I used to look at my patients and say, you know, your exercise, non-negotiable, right? It's non-negotiable. There's no dialogue. We're not, you know, assembling a committee to discuss this. We're not going to, you know, get back to it in 6 months. This is non-negotiable, right? So stick your sneakers out near the front door and shut the hell up. Just do it.
Just,
you know, that's
it.
Why the Nike logo always, you know, resonated so well with me. And I understand your path started with exercise.
Yes, or not wanting to. I had, my father was a dancer and I danced most of my life. And then at some point I stopped and I just didn't pick up an exercise routine to replace that movement practice. And I was on a level hike with my boyfriend at the time, and I was out of breath, and senior citizens were passing me by, and this was a long time ago. And I thought, this is it, that this moment is the turning point for me. I have to make a decision and honor it and commit to it. And that's what I did.
Absolutely.
And I haven't missed a beat in 30 years.
There you go. And you look like it too, you know, and everyone gets into exercise for a variety of different reasons, of course. What you did was your own path. It was, is uniquely yours. Other people may have, like, you know, real issues, and we're going to get into that, because what I've listened to for years is, I don't have the time. I'm going to sweat. My hair is going to flatten out. I don't have the right clothes. I look stupid. I'm ashamed of my appearance. Would you like me to go on? I could go for about 3 hours of this. And I get it. I hear you. Rock on. You know, I'm empathetic. I'm compassionate. But damn it, we still have to do something here. and this is one of the reasons why I'm so adamant about this non-negotiable thing. One of my patients one day told me something interesting. She said, you know, the moment you said the word non-negotiable, I felt this release, because I no longer had to think about it. It's a lot of work to have to sit there. So I always ask people, I said, If you're supposed to be doing, and you know you're supposed to be doing something, like you're supposed to go to the grocery store and stock up, and you're supposed to get home, start meal prep, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but you're coming up with all kinds of interesting, creative ways to be able to get around that little sucker. You're dancing around it, right? Mm-hmm. So what you're really doing is you're starting the conversation that goes like this: should I? Could I? Would I? See, the moment those words pop up in your brain, you're having an issue. You need to stop immediately, little red stop sign. And you immediately need to say, shut the hell up, to your brain, because you got demons rolling around in there in your little prefrontal cortex. And then just do it. Just blindly do it. You know this is good for you, kind of a thing. All right. So that being said, I want to get into this non-negotiable practice, because I absolutely Love it. Let's start with step one. Identify what matters. What do you mean by that?
I always ask myself, what will my future self want? What's important to me? What's going to, and this is a great phrase, what's going to move the needle for me? And once I identify what's really important, what really matters, not just in the short term, although that's important too, but in the long term, that's what I focus on. And it can't be everything. I think you have to focus on one or two things that really matter.
Okay, but, you know, a lot of people haven't done that amount of introspection. Okay, they haven't. So what they're doing is they're doing what they think they're supposed to do.
Right.
What other people have told them to do. But help someone who's having a problem with this, because quite frankly, I found this identify what matters oftentimes to be the biggest stumbling block. It's a real obstacle for a lot of people. And let's go in specifically into a woman's mind. You know, the little gerbil wheels going round and round and the strange things that are going in and out of our brain that really we overcomplicate things. We just do because we're kind of thinking about a lot of things at one time, aren't we? Help a woman go through that. Okay, here she is. She's like, I don't know what matters. You know, like my kids are so important. And, you know, I have a, you know, job that's really kind of, you know, excellent. And I'm really kind of doing okay with it and whatever. Okay, what really matters?
I think you have, again, I'm going to evoke the future self. The future self is my most trusted advisor. And it's not what I want in the moment because my present self just wants to sit on the sofa and watch Netflix, but my future self has ambitions. And so I think it's important to think about a future self timeline. Where do you see yourself in a year? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? And what's going to get you there? And that's what matters. And in terms of women who are moms or caregivers to elderly parents, if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be present well enough for everybody else. And so there are always a lot of, as you said, shoulda, woulda, coulda, a lot of excuses to help others. The other thing that's interesting is former U.S. President Eisenhower had a matrix that he used and to determine whether something was urgent or important. And a lot of us, a lot of women respond to urgency, to somebody else's emergency, to what's urgent to someone else. You know, and even email is reactive. It's not proactive, you're reacting to somebody else's request. So if you can figure out what's urgent versus what's important, if it's urgent and important, you have to act on it. If it's just urgent, can you not do it? Can you ask someone else to do it? So I think it's a lot of evaluation, but the introspection mainly comes from where you see yourself in a year or 5 years or 10 years.
I think a lot of people have trouble with the future self thing. You know, yes. Because you can't even imagine what tomorrow's going to look like half the time.
Right,
like,
right.
What am I going to look like this afternoon? Who am I tomorrow? You know, and quite frankly, tomorrow is your future self.
Yes.
You know, but what you're looking at is a little microcosm. Right. So there's all these little micro future selves that build up into whomever this is going to end up being whenever. I've always, you know, wondered how one can create that thought, because you have to dig deep. You have to say to yourself, what is my path? What's my path? So if you look at, you know, the motherhood thing, well, you know, 5 years from now, my kids will be 5 years older is your response. But that's not what we're talking about. I mean, that's obviously true.
Right.
What about you?
Right.
What about your future self, you know, versus who you're caregiving, or, you know, maybe my mom will be now in assisted care because, you know, within 2 years, you know, she could, a woman is extraordinary. She could tell you about everyone but herself. The guy across the street, a total stranger, you know, she's really good with this stuff, but herself ain't happening.
Yes.
So how does someone begin to shape that future self? You know, when you're looking at the corporate end of this, I get that. It's sort of like, okay, fine, you're at X part of the ladder, and where do you want to go? And, you know, are you talent stacking yourself, you know, looking around and seeing what other opportunity? I get all that. That's like 100%, you know, percent. But let's go deeper. Well, you know, your own thing, who you are,
right,
and
right,
how you want to grow. Because if you want an enhanced health span, the years of robust life, then you need to have meaning and purpose in life that can sustain all of that. And I think I was shocked when I asked the very first sort of like 10 or 20 people years ago, as I was beginning some research in this, what's your meaning in life? What's your purpose in life? And many times I'll just get a recitation of corporate stuff, or, you know, we're going to have a bigger house, or, you know, we're going to live in Austin instead of New Jersey, or, you know, whatever the issue is. And I'm like, no, that's not what I was thinking about. What do you think, Robin?
I totally agree with you. And I think it does take introspection. But I think if you frame it in easier language, like, what do I really want? What makes me happy? I mean, that's a tough question. What makes me happy, right? What makes me smile? What entertains me? What activity do I get involved with where time just flies by and I don't even realize it's happening? And it's about the self. But I just want to go back to what you said, Pam, about micro decisions or micro moments. One of the easiest ways to understand the importance of doing something for your future self is when you're doing something late at night, you're watching a movie, you're watching television, you're reading, and it's now starting to go past your bedtime or what you've assigned as your bedtime. The way I get myself to stop and go to sleep is say, how am I going to feel in the morning if I stay up and keep watching? It's going to affect tomorrow me. And so tomorrow me is closer. It's nearer than retired me, right? Or 10 years from now me. And I think that can help people understand how important it is that present you does something, but future you, whether it's tomorrow you or 5 years from now you, lives with the consequences of your actions. And if you think about what choices can I make? How can I invest in myself? That starts to make things clearer. But it is hard to find one's purpose if you didn't start out with a purpose. Like if I started out with a purpose that I wanted to be a painter or I wanted to be a dancer, you start with a purpose. But finding one later in life is difficult when you are caring for children or caring for elderly parents or caring for anybody in your life or in a 9-to-5 job or 9-to-9 job, however it works.
I think that so many people today, Robin, and I hear you loud and clear, so I'm going to stack on that, right? So I think a lot of people have short-term gratification issues, right? You know, I mean, hey, you sit on that couch and watch Netflix. I mean, what could be better? That with a, you know, very significant pint of ice cream at all times. And, you know, I think people start doing that. The other thing they get lost in is social media.
Yes.
And the social media thing, I think, is a nightmare. Because, you know, you get immersed in other people's narratives, the false misconceptions of craziness that they're doing in their lives. you get confused, you get befuddled by the whole thing. And then, you know, there's no purpose in meaning conversation anymore because the whole thing's turned kind of weird. And I think all of us have to fight that to a certain degree because we live in a world of very quick gratification. There's a, you know, there's a phone call away to DoorDash or Uber Eats, right? And the rest of it, it's kind of nuts. And what I always say is hit the pause button. Got to hit the pause button. I always like to point in the middle of my forehead because the prefrontal cortex is right behind there. And that's the CEO of your brain. And it's like, yo, wait, what are you doing here? Are you responding or reacting? You know, you need jerking and reacting is what you're doing.
Yes.
And I'm kind of dwelling on this for a little bit, mostly because I think a lot of people can't even get past step one. You know, I think that they're having problems. I love the fact about the future self. I love dividing it up into little micro future selves. Like, how are you going to do this afternoon? You going to take that walk? You know, I always say, walk your dog, even if you don't have one. Walk them. Okay? Just get your ass up. Move. You know, assume the vertical. And there's that. Right. But I think that people, if you say like 5 years from now, I think in the corporate world, that's a lot easier, relatively speaking, because, you know, I mean, if you're a software engineer, you kind of know how this is going to end. You better learn some AI right now. But in your personal self, it's like until it's too late. So focusing on your future self requires sitting down and doing something radical. It's called self-reflection.
Yes, yes. And your present self, there's a present self bias. That present self, as you said, has dominance and wants pleasure and wants comfort. And all the excuses that you mentioned earlier about not wanting to exercise, that's all the present self saying, that doesn't sound like fun, that doesn't sound comfortable, that's going to give me a problem, that's an issue for me. And so that's where commitment comes in, or pre-commitments, because if you talk about walking that dog, whether you have the dog or not, if you block it on your calendar and it becomes a commitment, something that you do automatically, that you don't negotiate about. You don't say, oh, should I go for the walk? Shouldn't I go for the walk? That's just a waste of time. That's a waste of bandwidth. You pre-decide and you commit to it. I think most people don't think about whether they should lock their door or not, right? Most people don't think, should I shower today? Should I not shower? I mean, maybe some people do.
Well, you know.
But most of us, there are certain things in our lives that are automatic. Brushing our teeth, combing our hair, putting pants on before we go outside, putting our shoes on. It's automatic. And I think if you make certain activities or initiatives or endeavors automatic, not everything, because then that becomes rigid, but the things that matter most to what you want. What your goals are. Some people have goals, and if you don't, then you do need that self-reflection, which is a whole other ball of wax, I think. I'm almost at the point where you do have a goal. You know something about what you want. And maybe that's meditating. Maybe that's exercising more. Maybe that's eating better. Maybe that's learning how to cook a different cuisine. So you pre-commit to it, you block it on your calendar, and you're firm in commitment, but flexible in methodology or flexible in timing. It can't be completely rigid. I mean, for me, my exercise comes first in the day, just because that way I know it's done. I've committed to it. I can get it done. I feel better and I can move on. And then I teach or I write or whatever I have to do. But I think you need to find a goal that you commit to. And even if you don't have purpose, you do have to exercise, right? You have to get up and move. And that can be the first one.
Right. You know, I've talked frequently in the past about a very famous book that was written by an Australian hospice worker. It's called The Five Regrets of the Dying. There's obviously more than five, but, you know, she was kind of hitting the high points. And interestingly, a real central theme was that I never lived the life that I really wanted to live. And that was a real eye-opener to so many people. You know, it's like, whoa, wait a minute now. What's going on with that? And that I really wasn't happy. That what made me happy, it just, you know, I never got around to. Like, So that all leans into purpose and meaning. Like, and fight for it. I don't care who you are and what you are. You've got to fight for that, like in a big way. So I think that, you know, the identify what matters. I want everyone out there in the Herb podcast land to really read this chapter very, very carefully, because it will take you by the hand and help you understand what that future self is. Again, I'm a strong believer in that future self is happening in the next 2 minutes, right? And so you don't have to go down the five-year thing. You never know where it's going to go anyway. My motto has always been that Helen Keller, you know, quote, life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all. I go for the daring adventure. If I fall on my ass, I pick myself up and go, what was the life lesson on that one? Good, bad, or otherwise, you know, and then I move it along. And it takes that kind of, way to be able to push forward. That's also another reason why I ask women, especially, to get into some kind of maybe sport, if you could. And when I say sport, I don't mean you have to be, you know, an Olympian. I just mean like, you know, join a walking club or something. And then when you do that, you have to be disciplined. They're all out there at 8 o'clock. Where the hell are you? You know, lace it up, girlfriend, get on out and do it. This is non-negotiable. They're sitting around, you know, giving you the evil eye because you're late. And that was a consequence, right? And so that's one of the reasons why get into something where you're accountable. I love that accountability thing, because if you need trainer wheels, you know, to be able to understand how this future self kind of thing and how the non-negotiable mindset goes, then buddy up, you know, maybe get someone to walk with you. And then you kind of get into it and you go, wow, this really feels good. And then your buddy says, hey, I can't make it tomorrow morning, but you better walk, you know, anyway, even though, you know, I'm not there. And that's an acid test. It's like, you know, your trainer wheel just fell off and now you're on your own. And that's why I just love this concept of the non-negotiable practice. All right. Now, when we come back, I'm going to ask Robin about step 2, 3, and 4, because now we can rock and roll. The Her Podcast is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, all rooted in nature. In addition to women's multivitamins, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y, is presenting the new Her Life Stages products, providing support for the menstrual years, including PMS, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and even libido. This integrative holistic approach has a woman's back throughout her entire life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages, you've got options. You can run on over to your local health food store or check it out at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Amazon, or scroll over to Solaray.com and use promo code HER20 for 20% off your purchase. Women, SolarAe's got your back. And we're back. Okay, step one was identify what matters. It's that future self thing, consequences. That means in the next 2 minutes even. So come on now, you know, be mindful. Be mindful of your non-negotiable mindset. Now, step two is focus on what matters. Go for it, Robin.
Yes, it's easy to, well, it's not easy to identify what matters, but once you do, you need to focus on it. And that means, as you were saying, Pam, getting rid of digital distractions, whether that means turning your phone upside down, putting your phone in a different room, putting it on do not disturb. It means creating your environment in a way that will be more conducive. So you, I think you said, put your sneakers near the door or put your weights out near your desk or have cues that remind you. And blocking it out on a calendar, sort of like your appointment with a doctor or your appointment with a boss or whoever, wherever you would show up for without hesitation, helps you focus. And so time blocking, also chunking activities so that you don't feel that you have to do everything at once. So let's say you have to do a presentation. You think, well, I'm going to create 3 slides of this deck today. That's what I'm going to focus on. But focus allows you to concentrate on what matters.
So I think you and I are both fans of breaking things up. Okay. And making them, you know, much more doable, which I think is exceptionally important. Now, you and I are both writers. So I'll share after you. Okay. What are your ways to focus on what matters with writing? Because you know the nightmare with writing. It's like, I don't have anything in my brain today. All right. Or, you know, you dance around. I'll get to it. You know, that kind of thing. I've heard this from people who've tried to write for years. I've written 5 books. I'm writing my 6th. And you're all over it, Robin. Thank God you wrote the book. But, you know, tell me your secrets for being able to be as productive as you have, because my God, how many books have you written? I've lost count.
I have too. I think it's almost 30, but
yeah, it's pretty crazy. What are your secrets for being able to stay productive with something that clearly you've identified as mattering to you?
Yes, it's on my calendar. I, on days that I am not teaching, I am writing and I'm there. And there's an old saying, I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, think with a pencil in your hand. Well, now I think with a keyboard. And I don't wait for inspiration. I'll give you an example. Maya Angelou, the great poet, biographer, social justice warrior, would rent a hotel room and she would go to the hotel room and write. And she didn't wait for inspiration. Inspiration doesn't always come, but if you act, if you start writing, the action brings the motivation, the action brings on the creative thinking, the action brings on the critical thinking. And so I think of it as, and I'm sure you'll agree, there is no writing, there's only rewriting. There is no designing, there's only redesigning. Everything is iterative, there's an iteration. And if you don't put anything on the page, there's nothing to fix, there's nothing to edit, there's nothing to design. And there are tricks. A friend of mine who is a writer always starts a new page, a new paragraph, with a sentence, and then that's where he ends so that he has something to come back to. Some people will create takeaways that they want to accomplish that day and work from that. Some people use outlines. Some people use creativity prompts, depending on what they're working on. So you have to find what works for you. But my method is I'm going to sit there for whatever amount of time I have, and I'm going to work on something, whether it's good, bad, or ugly, and I'll fix it at another point, but it's a commitment. A friend of mine who I talked into writing a book, and he got a book contract, and he's a professional, creative professional. He started as a copywriter, so he knows how to write. But he said, Robin, he called me and he said, this is different. This isn't writing a headline. This is writing a lot of words. So I gave him my non-negotiable method, and the book is out and doing great. And he said he just went into his room on Saturdays and told his family that he'd be gone for 2 hours. And that's how he got the book out.
You know, we've all gone through, you know, especially when we started writing, you know, the school of hard knocks. And I'm someone who needs to have just a teeny bit of spa music in the background, just a little something, you know. And I'm laughing because, you know, a very good friend of mine who's a very successful author just loves to write in a Starbucks. I'm like, are you out of your flipping mind with all yelling and screaming going on and whatever? He just loves it. He just loves it.
Yes,
and
I
do have friends who, you know, go to hotels, and I can't do the hotel thing. That's just, I need to have a familiar surrounding. I need to have my, as Sylvia Plath put it, you know, kind of her woman cave, you know, every writer needs her room, you know, and I usually fill it up with flowers, which I love, makes me happy. And then I get my inspiration from nature. So what I do is I walk, I think, and then I dictate as I go along. Thank God for technology. And so I'm kind of walking and thinking. And then when I get back, I put computer to paper, pen to paper. No, I'm a doctor, remember. And so you know what my handwriting is going to look like. So I just started banging away on either my iPad or my big boy, the computer. And I'm kind of moving it along. There's nothing in the world that stimulates me more than taking a nice long walk or a hike. We have great research and science that shows that creativity increases very substantially as you stimulate your brain's neurons with physical activity. So I highly recommend that in a big way. Even when I'm lifting weights, you know, I'll always have my iPhone close by so that I can kind of dictate in. I'm like, oh, I just had this really great thought and I want to include in whatever. And I absolutely put signs everywhere. Do not disturb me on threat of death. Okay. Just don't even get near me. Like I will emerge in 3 hours. Okay. We're done. Interfere during that time, because, you know, if you're interfered with, it takes like half an hour, you know, by research to be able to resume your train of thought again. And that's happened to me enough times, and it's so painful that I can't deal with it. So I just go into the she cave and kind of do the gig, you know. So focus on what matters. Right? Writing for you is very, very important. Teaching is very important, you know. Give us a personal, you know, outside of exercise or something, give us a personal, you know, idea of what matters to you so that we could follow that all the way through. I'll give you mine after you give me yours. Something personal.
Well, the exercise is personal. There were times, and I don't know how it passed me by, when everybody was running to the gym and carrying yoga mats in the street, and somehow I missed that because I only thought dancing was what I did. And I had to find a way to make being on the elliptical or being on the treadmill interesting to myself, because dancing was fascinating and I loved to do it, but here this seemed boring and monotonous. So what I do is I put my laptop on the elliptical, and I don't use the arms, but I write while I'm, moving.
Doing the elliptical.
I'm another elliptical person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I have, I bought when COVID hit, we used to belong to a gym, but COVID hit, the gym's closed. So we purchased rather inexpensive elliptical, and my husband only uses that. But I also bought a writing desk with a bike. And so I write whether I'm on the bicycle or I write when I'm on the elliptical, and people think.
So you get inspired too. The same
yes.
way.
Yes.
Yeah. By moving your body.
By moving. And yeah.
So I love that. Just, you know, like focus on what matters. You know, if we look at this at the 30,000 foot level, obviously I have, you know, I've spent a lifetime talent stacking with so much wonderful, you know, achievement. I feel really great. It's all good and whatever. But at the end of the day, what's my purpose and meaning in life? And at the highest level, it's being of service. So I'm a physician, enough said. But at the same time, it doesn't stop there, clearly. I want to be of service. So I'm mentoring like you are. I want to help people. I do a tremendous amount of charity work. I want to help people. I want to be there for people. So to me, that is one of the highest levels of what matters to me. And that's what follows me throughout all of this. And so then that takes us to step three, act on what matters. So we've identified what matters, focus on what matters. Now we're going to act on it. So I kind of gave you some examples there. I mean, I show up to the charity events. You know, I help fundraise. And I'm showing up. You know, you have to, I think the act on what matters is all about showing up. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I'm trying to do this. And I'm striving to do. No, shut up. Show up. Do it. Just do it. Stop the try thing and all the rest of it. What do you think about this? What are the high points on act on what matters?
Jean-Paul Sartre, who I admire greatly, the French existentialist, said, commitment is an act, not a word. And you said it. You have to show up. You have to just do it. Enough negotiation, no self-negotiation, no hesitation. You show up and you do it. And you'll feel better because once you start doing it, motivation follows. Once you start doing it, you become a person who does things. You become a person who shows up, not a person who hesitates, not a person who questions why or should or could or would, but it becomes identity. Once you act, it becomes part of your identity. I'm not somebody who needs to exercise. I'm somebody who exercises.
I am an exerciser. That's your identity. You're not striving to do any, you are. So, you know, Alicia Liu, who is, please God, you know, let her medal at the Olympics now as the ice skater that she is an ice skater. She's not trying to be one. She's not dreaming of being one. She's just out there sweating it out and showing up, working out, doing her thing. She is that. That's what I like about the act on what matters, because it means you have decided, you have committed. There is no conversation, no committee, nothing. You're just going to do that. Okay? I love that. Now, in step four, it's make what matters non-negotiable. Now, I was just thinking, you know, all along throughout step one, two, and three, you're kind of making it negotiable already, or is this something different?
Once you identify what matters, you're focusing on it and you're showing up, you probably need to do it more than once. And that's when it becomes a non-negotiable. It becomes something that becomes part of your identity, that you're working on this initiative, you're working towards this goal. Irregardless, as you said, it could be that you're going to show up to do charity work. You're going to show up to write. You're going to take a walk every day. You're going to make sure your dog is fed, whatever it is. You make it what I call a non-negotiable, which is it's a pre-commitment. And you don't waver. You don't not do it. You don't not show up to work. You don't not brush your teeth. You don't not take a shower. It's one of the, it becomes an automatic part of your life. And just to go back to the identities for a moment, because I think it's really important. We all have several identities. So I'm an educator. I'm a writer. I'm someone who exercises. I'm a mom. A friend of mine who is a co-owner of an ad agency, PJ, he's also a writer. He's a novelist and he's written nonfiction. He's a martial arts expert and he runs an ad agency. And he says, well, when the ad agency is giving me a problem, then I'm a martial arts guy. When I lose a martial arts fight, I'm a writer. And so you can depend on different identities to feel good about yourself at different points. But to answer your question about the fourth step, which is that I only make a couple of things non-negotiable in terms of endeavors or initiatives. And if they're working, then I can add on.
You know, the just sitting down and saying the words non-negotiable, just saying it has some magic behind it.
Yes.
Because, you know, there's one woman who I knew, I just loved her to death. She was just having the worst time trying to wrap her head around this whole concept. You know, like, so I said, give me an example of something that's absolutely non-negotiable. She said, my hair salon appointment. Okay. So it took me 2 years to find this guy. He is the best in the business. He coughs through the nose. You know, he's booked out until Christmas. And there is no way I'm ever missing an appointment with this guy. All right? It's not happening. It's non-negotiable. I said, oh, see, you do understand non-negotiable. Now, if you were to treat yourself like that, and certain things that you were doing in your life that give you that same kind of, look at the reward you get by keeping that appointment. You know, your hair looks great and all the rest of it. And, you know, it just becomes that. But to your point about repeating it, this is why part two of the book is actually called The Non-Negotiable Practice. So, is practice the same thing as ritual or routine? How does that work?
Yes, it is. Twyla Tharp, the great choreographer, wrote a book about creativity. And she said that, you know, she could stay in under the covers at 6 o'clock in the morning, but she used the word routine. She gets up, she puts her gym clothes on, she lived in New York, hails a taxi and goes to the gym. And once she's hailed that taxi, it's all set. It's a part of her practice. So practice, you know, as a physician, they always say, are you in private practice or are you in group practice? It's what we do. And it becomes a routine. I don't call it a habit because habit takes a long time to form. This is the reverse of habit formation in that you immediately decide, you commit, and it becomes an automatic practice, ritual, endeavor. But practice means that you're going to do it for a month, a year, 5 years. I've been writing and exercising for 30 years without missing a beat. So I think you have to see, I mean, how would you define a practice?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've given this, needless to say, a little thought. And when you mention the word habit, you know what I tell people? When you're doing something that's wonderful in your life, where you're doing the work, whatever it may be, You're getting up at 6 a.m. and you're starting to write. You're doing your, you know, cooking appropriately, whatever it may be. You're getting to sleep on time, all this stuff. When you do those things in the beginning, you're creating a practice. You got a practice going on, right? But you still have like this little whisper in the back, and it says, shoulda, coulda, woulda? Should I get to bed on time? I don't know. Netflix has got something new tonight. I don't know. You know, that type of thing. There's like this little whisper, little demon on your shoulder, right? But then when you just say, screw you, I'm going to bed, and you keep doing that, then the most interesting thing happens. That little demon's rants and raves in your ear become a barely audible whisper. And then finally, one day, nothing's there. Suddenly, you just automatically, you use that word, you automatically default to brushing mm-hmm. your teeth,
yes.
getting that exercise done, writing for those 3 hours, you know, whatever it may be. So you know for a fact that when the conversation ends in your brain, you've made tremendous progress, but it won't happen unless you practice. You practice your piano. Mozart did. Look where it got him. Okay? You practice on the ice. Alicia Liu's out there kicking ass. I'm just saying. And then you practice, and then eventually, you know, you can kind of master some of this for yourself. Little bits and pieces. And I think if you can be proud of these bits and pieces, just give yourself an atta girl, rock on with your bad self. Look at you. Doesn't that feel good when you got a whole night's sleep and your aura ring just, you know, lit up? You're my little aura ring. And I'm just saying, you can have buddies everywhere, even if they're not human. My aura ring will yell and scream at me if I was a bad girl and I, you know, went to bed too late or, you know, got rotten sleep because I've got metrics coming out of my ovaries. When I look at my cell phone in the morning, it was like my REM sleep went right to hell. And so, you know, I always know. It's like I've got guardrails here, right? And so it could come from everywhere. Maybe you've got your Fitbit or your Whoop or, you know, Fitness Pal. And it's all there to help you, you know, on the straight and narrow so that you can have enough practice and achievements and learnings from this. And one last little point. Ladies, listen to me. You little perfectionists, you. I know where you're thinking. If I can't do it perfectly, I'm not doing it at all. All right? Here comes your bitch slap. Okay, stop that right now. No. What you do is you just learn. Look at a child learning to walk. You know, they're slipping all over the place. Well, you keep doing that throughout life. We all slip all over the place. And that's the way it is. It's called learning. So, you know, you teach, I teach, you know, we watch students all day long and they're like, okay, having a rough day today, but yet tomorrow crushed it. It's called life learning. That's exactly what it is. You know, I could talk with you forever and I am beholden to you for this beautiful book you wrote that I just think really will help people, you know, get set on the right track and really wrap their head around what a non-negotiable mindset is about. Decide, commit, just do it. Learn, grow, enhance, all of those things. Look at the beautiful rewards. And if you fall down every now and then, dust off your ass and keep moving. For crying out loud. It's called learning. Ugh, tough love. All right. All from me. Robin, thank you so much for being on the Her podcast.
Thank you, Pam. You're amazing, and you're an inspiration. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for
everything. Well, listen, takes a village. And everyone, please run on out and get her wonderful new book, The Secret to Getting Stuff Done, The Non-Negotiable Mindset. And the author is Robin Landa, L-A-N-D-A. And if you want to learn more about her wonderful work, just go to her website at robinlanda.com. And oh boy, has she been prolific, to say the least. All right, Robin, thank you so much. Thank and we will you. Most definitely have you back on because, oh boy, this mindset issue comes up all the time. All
thank
right.
You,
now, oh, I could just talk forever about this, one of my favorite subjects. But at the same time, I've expressed my gratitude to Robin, and I also want to express my gratitude to my sponsor, Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs, rooted in nature, and the new Her Life Stages product. Scope it out at solaray.com. Take a moment now, leave us a review, because we just sit around waiting to hear from you. And I just want you to know that this has been a production of Podcast Health. And I want to remind you that, you know, your time in this world is quite limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. Get the right mindset, the non-negotiable mindset, and get on out there and seize the day. Thanks for listening, everyone.